This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good morning, everyone. It is Sunday, June 1st, 2014. First, we'd like to begin with some really good news. I found my Rambam. Yay. Yes. Of course, it doesn't really affect us because, you know, we're already into volume 2 of his Hilchot Shabbat. But for me personally, that's fantastic. Yeah, I know the rest of you are just so excited. Today, we're going to be doing the last segment on carrying. We didn't record last week because I couldn't find the recorder. I did find that too, though, as, you know, if you're listening, you probably picked that up by now. So we're going to do chapter 19 of Rambam. This is going to wrap up the unit on carrying. Rambam actually talks about it a little bit more, but it involves carrying with animals. And since that's not particularly relevant to people, I think we can hold off on that for now. So again, you know, we're going to be as thorough as we can, but not overloading with details. They're not going to be as practical. I would always suggest read whatever we skip on your own and get the full flavor of it. So for those who were here last week, some of this might be familiar because we spoke about this sort of off the cuff, and now we're going to see it a little bit more in depth. Here we're going to be talking about, in this chapter, questions about clothing and carrying, right, and how that fits in, whether or not is considered tafel, secondary to what you're, you know, wearing. We saw some examples of how even wearing something might be considered carrying, depending on how you like hold it on. And we have more examples of that, including certain items that could be problematic to carry no matter what. Sarisa, start us off with number 1 in chapter 19.
We may not go out wearing any weaponry on the Sabbath. The following rules apply should one go out wearing weaponry. If they are objects that are one's garments, for example, a coat of mail, a helmet, or iron boots, one is not liable. If, however, one goes out carrying articles that are not one's garments, for example, a spear, a sword, a bow, a round shield, or a triangular shield, he is liable.
Some of you might remember the Gemara off of which this is based, when we did our class on gun control. And there's a dispute about whether or not a sword is considered an adornment jewelry, or whether or not it's, you know, just a weapon and it's something that's bad. You know, today, the difference would be like if you're a Marine. Right? Marines get swords, or at least if you remember those old commercials with the, right? So that's part of their, quote, dress uniform. Right? So for them, it's kind of an adornment, even though, you know, today it's still kind of ridiculous. You know, also I should throw in a disclaimer here that, you know, if you say, well, what about things like the Israeli army? If, you know, you actually have an emergency situation where, like, you're actually fighting a war, you know, and pikuach nefesh kicks in, and you're talking about preventing a life, saving a life, or preventing murder, right, self-defense thing, you know, that's a whole separate other halacha. But generally, weapons are not considered, like, at best, it's a rabbinic prohibition to wear military garb, or at least, you know, things that are matters, like, not just a uniform, but specifically, like, the coat of mail helmet, or, you know, the, chances here, certain boots, certain things that are, you know, if you're purely military thing here, right? It's prohibited even though you're doing it as normal clothing, right? But other things such as the actual weapons, according to Rambam, it's chayav. I mean, it's an actual biblical prohibition to say, walk out with a holstered gun, just like anything else. You can't say this is part of my uniform, right? How the Marines would fit in, I don't know, like hold that up as a discussion. Do we have any Marines here? Thankfully, no, so that's not going to come up a bit. Dana, 2.
We may not go out wearing a sandal studded with nails to fasten it. Even on festivals, the sages decreed that we should not go out wearing such sandals. It's permitted to go out wearing a belt with pieces of gold and silver embedded into it as kings wear, for this is a piece of jewelry and is permitted to wear all jewelry. This license is granted, provided the belt does not hang loosely, lest it fall in the public domain and one go and bring it.
All right, so the first thing with, like, the nails, as the footnote explains, it's kind of a weird halal. Think of it as something like cleats, for example. And the concern was, in certain instances, people could get trampled. Read footnotes, was it 6 for greater details on that. Now, the first thing here, it says here, V'chol shu tachshit mutar. Anything that's jewelry is permitted, meaning there are things that you're allowed to wear that, you know, jewelry is fine, but there are certain concerns here, right? You don't want to have something that's too loose that it might come to fall in a public domain. What happens if it falls in a public domain? You're probably going to come to carry it. Okay? Now here's where we get even more interesting. This is stuff that even if rabbis who hold of this usually don't teach publicly because people just don't listen or aren't going to listen. Lauren, number 3.
A ring that has a seal is considered to be a piece of jewelry for a man, but not for a woman. A ring without a seal, by contrast, is considered to be a piece of jewelry for a woman, but not for a man. Accordingly, a woman who goes out wearing a ring that has a seal and a man who goes out wearing a ring without a seal are liable.
So stop there for... so continue. Yeah.
Why are they liable? They did not transfer them in an ordinary manner. It is not an ordinary practice for a man to wear a ring on his finger that is not appropriate for him, nor for a woman to wear a ring on her finger that is not appropriate for her. Nevertheless, there are times when a man gives his ring to his wife to hide at home and she places it on her finger while she is walking. Similarly, there are times when a woman gives her ring to her husband to take it to sit, and he places it on his finger while he is walking to the jeweler's store. Therefore, although the rings are not appropriate for the individuals mentioned above, because they do occasionally wear such rings, they are considered to have transferred them in an ordinary manner. Accordingly, they are liable.
All right. So... Any thoughts on this right now?
The Rambam is making a comment about fashion.
Yeah, well, first off, it's not really the Rambam as much as based on explicit Mishnah, right? So, practically today, right, you've got two different types of rings. I gave the example of a signet ring and a plain wedding band, right? So, according to Rambam, man wearing a signet ring is considered jewelry. Woman wearing a wedding band is considered jewelry. Those are reversed, meaning a man wearing a plain band isn't, or a woman wearing a signet ring. So, according to this straight halacha, a man wearing a wedding band, right, with no seal outside on Shabbat, with no Eruv, violates Shabbat biblically. Now, again, how do we interpret this? One, two popular ways of interpreting this would be as follows. One, based on the language of the Mishnah, certain things are prohibited, specifically. In which case, in order to have them permitted, you need a new rabbinic enactment to say, well, this is now permitted. Another way of interpreting it is to say, well, the problem is, as Dana put it, a question of fashion. Fashion changes. Today, it is very common for men to wear plain wedding bands, right? I mean, not every man does it, but it's common enough that this is now the fashion of the day. In which case, you could plausibly argue that it wasn't a specific decree against rings, but rather a general decree about not wearing jewelry that's not appropriate for you, and rings were a specific example at one point in time in our history. Right, so the people today who will say that men can wear wedding rings would be of the opinion that says, well, since the fashion has changed, right, well, then now it's permitted because men do this, and now men are wearing it just like men usually do. And for those who would not wear wedding rings, men specifically would not wear wedding rings, and would say it's forbidden for a man to wear a wedding ring, would follow the approach of, it doesn't matter what the reason was, since the Mishnah specifically, you know, said, you're not allowed to wear this, you're not allowed to wear this. In the event we have a Sanhedrin HaGadol that can come and overturn that and start updating the laws for the past 1,500 years, you know, we're going to be stuck until that. Yeah.
What about men wearing earrings today?
Haven't gotten there. We'll ask that in a little bit after we do a few more stuff with jewelry. All right. Oh, by the way, everything I just said with men wearing wedding rings applies to women wearing signet rings, which is not nearly as popular, but it still happens enough.
What's a signet ring?
A signet ring is a ring that has like a seal on it that you use to like, you know, you've never seen that? So you'll see a few... Well, it's got. Think of it as a stamp, right? You know what a rubber stamp is?
Sure.
So think of it as that on your ring, where you dip it in something. Where's a good example of this? Ever see A Beautiful Mind, the movie?
Long time.
So there's actually a scene there where he melts wax onto an envelope and sticks his ring into the wax, and that creates an imprint. Or if you've ever seen the movie Dune, the David Lynch version. I know it's weird that this comes up as often as it does here. So one of the things that they identify the sun with is his signet ring. Hamanan Achashverosh.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, I know. Like, you would think the rabbi would go immediately to Michael at Esther, but no. First A Beautiful Mind, then Dune, then Purim. Right? Achashverosh gave Haman the signet ring. That's how he made those. But, you know, he could apply to, like, any other seals. Anyway. Although a ring that does not have a seal is considered to be a piece of jewelry for a woman should not go out wearing such a ring, lest she take it off in the public domain and show it to her friends, as women often do. Footnote here, this point is mentioned several times in this chapter as a rationale for restrictions governing women's jewelry in the public domain. If, however, she went out with such a ring, she is not liable. Now, he doesn't say it's mutar. He says patur, which means, again, it's rabbinically prohibited, assuming, again, no Eruv, no kosher Eruv. Going out is a rabbinic act of carrying for a woman to go out with a plain wedding band, even though it's jewelry, even though jewelry is permitted. The concern is she might come to take it off and show it to her friends. And with this, I always have to tell the story about, I mean, I know I told the story last week, but it's always worth repeating. My friend from Chicago, I wouldn't call her a feminist, but she's a brilliant, brilliant person, was learning the Mishnah and got really ticked off at how sexist the rabbis were. It's like, what do you mean women just take off their stuff and show it to each other? We're not that shallow and whatever. And, you know, rails off on it for a while. Fast forward a few months, she gets engaged, all real happy. And then she told me, you know, at the engagement party, you know, my friends came in, before they said mazel tov, they went straight to my hand. Says, I have to say, I apologize to the rabbis, women really are like this. So, if you go to an engagement party, you know, when a woman just gets the ring, you know what that is. Yeah.
The translation says, as women often do. The Rambam says, osos tamid.
Right. It says they always. Well, I tamid isn't, yeah, I guess, yeah, also that they always do it, which could be hyperbole. But at any rate, assuming there is no Eruv, it would be impermissible for a woman to go out on Shabbat wearing any sort of ring. Rabbinic decree. All right. A man, by contrast, may go out wearing a ring that has a seal, for it is considered to be a piece of jewelry for him, and it is not usual practice for a man to show off his jewelry to others. It has, nevertheless, become accepted practice for people to go out without wearing any rings at all. Notice his idiom here, v'nahagu kol ha'am shelo yitzu b'tabaat klal, which means, at least in terms of this last point, it comes under the halachot of minhag. But what does? Specifically, men going out wearing a signet ring. For Rambam, a man wearing a plain wedding band still is usur. But if a man's coming out with a signet ring, or like a ring with a seal on it, that's a matter of minhag. Right? Okay, question. Oh, I thought you had something. More stuff on jewelry. Risa, number 5.
A woman who goes out wearing a pin with an eye is liable. Well, a man is not liable. A woman who goes out wearing a pin without an eye is liable, while a woman is not liable, for this is considered to be a piece of jewelry for her. She is prohibited against wearing it only because of a decree, lest she take it off and show it to her friend.
Right, so there are certain types of jewelry, again. First, you have to deal with the cultural conventions of what's man's jewelry versus woman's jewelry. And then with women, there are additional restrictions about lest you go and show it off to your friends in Rishut HaRabim. So continue.
The following general principles apply. Whenever a woman goes out wearing an item that is not considered to be jewelry for him, and it is not worn as a garment, he is liable if he transfers it in an ordinary manner. Whenever a man goes out wearing a piece of jewelry that hangs loosely and could easily fall, and thus cause him to bring it through the public domain, and similarly, whenever a woman goes out wearing a piece of jewelry that she is likely to take off and show it to her friends, they are not liable. Whenever an adornment that is not likely to fall, nor is it likely to be shown to others, a woman is permitted to go out wearing it. Therefore, she may go out wearing a bracelet that is placed on the forearm, or a garter that is placed on the thigh if it clings tightly to the flesh and will not slip off. These rules apply in other similar situations.
All right, so this is where Rambam is giving kind of a general rule here. If it's something that isn't likely to fall or shown to others, well, then it could be okay. So Dana asked about earrings, right? Now, when women, as I understand, put in earrings, you might make a distinction between clip-ons and pierced, right? If something is clipped on, you might say there's a greater chance of taking it off, and you might say there's a greater chance of taking it off and showing it to friends. If it's pierced, right, no normal woman that I know of would actually take off an earring in public at all. My understanding is the backings can get lost very easily, and we don't like when that happens, right? Or, I mean, I don't care because I don't have pierced ears or wear earrings. So there are a couple of ways, again, of looking at these halachot. We have specific items of jewelry mentioned in the Mishnah and the Gemara. So with those, we take... mind keeping it down a little up there? Thanks. Keep it down a little up there. We're giving cheer.
Sorry.
Sure. So there are certain things that we can, you know, that are mentioned specifically in the Gemara, right? So you can say those, once it's mentioned, those are going to be usher completely, and the rest is going to depend on the situation. Meaning, if a piece of jewelry is worn a certain way, well then, in theory, it could be subject to change. You could argue today, well, women usually don't show off, like, take their rings off their fingers and show it to other women in public, so maybe that's a reason for change too, except for right here, right? It's mentioned as a specific law, right? Other things that might not be mentioned specifically would be, say, a necklace, right? Do women take off necklaces in public, right? On one end, it's a loose-fitting necklace, usually are loose-fitting, but on the other end, they also don't fall off, usually. So we leave those, you know, I'll leave those right now as open questions, but at least I can show how there are going to be different ways of interpreting these things, right? If it's a matter of a risk of having taken off, sure. You know, that's one issue. If it's a matter of, even if that changes, if it's mentioned specifically in the Gemara or Mishnah, you know, then you've got a whole different approach to it too, that you can understand why people might interpret things differently. All right? Dana, number six.
A woman should not go out with woolen strands, linen strands, or straps attached to her head, lest she remove them when she immerses herself and carry them in the public domain. She should not go out wearing a frontlet on her forehead, nor with bangles of gold that hang from the frontlet of her, on her cheeks, if they are not sewn together. Nor may she go out wearing a crown of gold on her head, nor with the ankle chains worn by maidens, so that they will not take long strides and thus destroy the signs of their virginity. It is forbidden to go out wearing any of these articles lest they fall and one carry them by hand.
Yeah. All right. So ignoring for a second the biology here, same problem. Laura, number seven. This is a fun one.
A woman should not go out wearing a necklace, a nose ring.
Yeah, so just want to interrupt here with the necklace thing, because, you know, we just talked about necklaces. Footnote 25 here says, Ram interprets this as a necklace with golden beads. Rashi interprets this as referring to a golden choker necklace. He also says, these are the notes on Halacha 4 regarding the opinions of wearing jewelry at present. All right, continue.
A nose ring, a flask of perfume attached to her forearm, a small round pouch in which balsam oil is placed, referred to as a bukhala. Nor should she wear a wig that will give the appearance that she has a full head of hair, nor a woolen pad that goes around her face, nor a false tooth, nor a golden crown that she places over a black tooth or a red blemish that she has on her teeth. She may go out with a silver tooth because this is not obvious. All these prohibitions were instituted lest the article fall and the woman carry it in her hands, or lest she remove it and show it to her friend.
Right. So here we've got that thing about velo bepeya shel se'ar. Shemenachet al rosha kashe tishir'eh ba'alat se'ar harbeh. This is the prohibition against wearing a wig on Shabbat. Right? We even have a qualification here, though. Whenever the sages forbade wearing an item in the public domain, it is forbidden to go out wearing that item in a courtyard for which there is no eruv. An exception is made with regard to a face pad and a wig. Permission is granted to go out wearing them to a courtyard where there is no eruv, so that a woman would not appear unattractive to her husband. Women who goes out carrying an empty flask with no perfume is liable. The reason why this thing here is important is there is a special decree. Remember what we were talking about several times about stacking dispensations, meaning carrying in a rabbinic area something that's a rabbinic prohibition should double up and become mutar, right? Not for these, right? So there's a special rabbinic decree on this stuff, and usually we don't have a gzera on a gzera decree on top of a decree. Here, when Chazal made their decree, they extended it to this particular case too, which means normally, let's say, again, following the straight Gemara thing, if I'm a guy wearing a wedding ring, I go out in a Rishut Harabim, right? I violate Shabbat, Biblical. Oh, wait, that's a bad example. Scratch that. Let's say I'm a woman wearing a wedding ring, okay? Plain band. Out in Rishut Harabim, in the public domain, where normally I'd be violating Biblical Shabbat for carrying, I'm only violating Shabbat rabbinically, all right? Because it's a decree, lest I come to take it off, even though it's jewelry and it's fine. But, big exception here, if it's in a chatzer that has no eruv, well then the prohibition of carrying there isn't going to be biblical. It's going to be rabbinic. Still, women would not be allowed to carry there. Or not carry there, I'm clearly not allowed to carry there. But even though it's rabbinically prohibited for a woman to wear a ring in the public domain, it's also prohibited for her to wear that ring in the private area where there is no eruv, the private shared area where there is no eruv, right? The exception specifically is for the wig, because it's considered a tachshit for the Baal, right? She's allowed to wear a wig out in that private-ish area, the shared area. It's not a public domain, but the private-ish one, because it's a way that the wife makes herself look nice for her husband. All right. Now, today, as you could probably guess, there are lots of women out there who wear wigs on Shabbat when there is no Eruv. How do women get away with that? I'll leave that up to people to ask their rabbis, who either, quote, we don't paskin that way, our wigs are different than their wigs, any other sorts of dispensations that kind of justify the prevailing practice. Because, you know, if you go into the Bialystoker synagogue, make announcements, hey, you know, y'all don't hold that there even could be an Eruv down here, and yet you women wear wigs, guess what? You're all Mechalei Shabbos the Rabbanan. Same thing if you go into like a modern Orthodox shul or any other place, or even, let's stick with Bialystok because there's no Eruv there, right? Hey, all you women wearing rings, guess what? You're all Mechalei Shabbos. It's not going to go over well, right? So, letter of the law, this stuff is prohibited. If there's an Eruv, or, you know, if there's a kosher Eruv, seem to be this would all be okay, right? But assuming you're in a place where there is no Eruv, no good, at least according to the Gemara. Right? What people do after the time of the Gemara, their business, and then I can refer you to the halachic process class. Where are we up to? 9.
8.
Oh, sorry. I thought I just did 8. Right. Whenever the sages... I just did 8. Whenever the sage forbade wearing an item in the public domain, you also can't do it. So we did that. 9.
Okay. A woman may go out wearing strands of hair that are attached to her head. Water passes through them, and they are therefore not considered to be an interposing substance for she to immerse herself. Consequently, she will not remove them. Hence, there is no necessity to prohibit wearing them lest she remove them and carry them into the public domain. This applies regardless of whether the strands of hair were taken from the woman's own tresses, those of another woman, or from an animal. An elderly woman should not, however, go out wearing strands of hair from a young woman, for they are becoming to her, and we fear that she might remove them and show them to a friend. A young woman, by contrast, may go out wearing strands of hair from an elderly woman.
Yeah, so, you know, again, there are specific concerns here. One is that if a woman goes to mikvah and there's stuff in her hair, you know, she'd have to take it out. But not everything needs to be removed. That gets into the laws of mikvah, what's considered a chatzitza. When you go to mikvah, you immerse, you're not allowed to have a chatzitza, which means like an interruption or a separation between your body and the skin. But not every foreign item is considered a real separation. There are a whole bunch of laws there, like min bimino eno chotzeitz, like a thing and its type are not considered to be a separation. Just to give one example that has nothing to do with this, I'm only including it because it's really cool. Irv Tendler once had a story about a woman who had one of those, the operations that they had in the ears before they, you know, put in the tube things or something like that, where she could not dunk her head fully into water. So if you can't do that, you can't really go to mikvah. So this was at a time where you could still do this. They went to Chinatown and created a helmet made out of shark skin that would serve to be like a watertight helmet, almost like a bathing cap sort of thing. And the reason why that would work is fish is not considered a chatzitza because it's considered part of the water. Hence, by putting on this, you know, shark skin type of helmet, turned out to be okay. Again, having nothing to do with Shabbos, but it involves sharks, and sharks are cool. Anyway, let's skip to 12. Dana?
She may go out with pepper, a grain of salt, or any other substance that is placed in the mouth to prevent bad breath. She should not, however, place these substances in her mouth on the Sabbath itself.
I mean, if you had it in your mouth before Shabbos, that's fine, but you don't do it on Shabbos. Now, again, how does pepper help bad breath? I don't know.
Who would keep pepper in their mouth overnight? Never mind. Women may go out wearing slivers of wood in their ears or with bells on their necks or garments and with a cloak fastened with a makeshift button.
See, that's how you know where they are. You ever hear that idiom? You should wear a bell because they just go and announce them. I didn't make that up.
No.
Okay.
Indeed, a woman may fasten her cloak in this manner using a stone or a nut on the Sabbath and go out, provided she does not use this leniency as a ruse and use a nut for this purpose in order to bring it to her young son. Similarly, she should not fasten her cloak in this manner using a coin, for it is forbidden to carry it. If her cloak was fastened using a coin, she may go out wearing it.
Yeah. So here's where we get into interesting questions that, you know, we find today, particularly regarding wearing keys, right? Because, you know, we were discussing once about how do you transfer keys on Shabbat. So we mentioned what about, you know, keys as part of the key belt. You'll find someone who might wear keys as pins, which can also, you know, refer to like the other problems that we saw earlier up in terms of, again, the closer you get to specific halachic piskei halacha, the more arguments you're going to find, the more differences of opinions you're going to have. Lauren?
A man may go out to the public domain with a sliver of wood in his teeth or in his sandals. If, however, it falls, he should not put it back. He may go out with wading or a sponge over a wound, provided he does not wind the cord or a string over them. The latter restriction applies because he considers the cord or the string as important and they do not assist the healing of the wound. He may go out with a garlic peel or an onion peel on a wound and with a bandage on a wound. He may open and close the bandage on the Sabbath. He may go out with a compress, a plaster, or a dressing on a wound. Similarly, one may go out with a salat on a foot sore, a locust egg, a fox's tooth, a nail from a gallows, and any other entity that is hung on a person's body to bring a cure, provided that physicians say it is effective.
Right, and then in the next halacha we have things about the kameya, the amulet stuff, right, which we saw before. Right, so certain things, you know, that kind of serve a purpose would be okay. Let's move on to on page 114, halacha 20. Right, because this is a little bit more relevant. It is permitted to wrap oneself in a tallit that has unwoven strands at its edges, even though they are long and do not enhance the appearance of the tallit, because they are considered subsidiary to it. The person wearing the tallit does not care whether they exist or not. Based on the above, a person who goes out wearing a tallit whose tzitzit are not halachically acceptable is liable, for these strands are important to him, and he is considered with completing what they are lacking, that they will be considered tzitzit. When, however, the tzitzit are halachically acceptable, is permitted to go out wearing this garment during the day and during the night. Tzitzit, I'll explain that in a second. Tzitzit that are halachically acceptable are not considered to be a burden, but rather an article that enhances the garment and beautifies it. Were the strands of tzitzit that are halachically acceptable to be considered a burden, it would be one would be liable for wearing such a garment even on Shabbat, since a positive commandment whose negation is not punishable by karet does not supersede the Shabbat. So this is an important halakha because it brings up that topic of what is considered kafel. If something is considered secondary to the garment, and let's say you've got, like, for example, a loose thread, you don't care if it's there or not. We discussed a bit about decorative buttons. Right? You know, so it makes the thing look nice, but it's, you know, really sewn on there. So is that considered tafel or not? The thing with the wearing it at night, anyone want to take a guess at what that is?
What do you mean the thing
about? When he says here, even at night, anyone want to take a guess as why he includes that without looking at the footnotes?
Because you're not, because you're not obligated to wear them at night.
Bingo. There's no mitzvah to wear tzitzit at night. It's only a beged yom, although there happens to be a dispute on that. Incidentally, it's also why women are exempt from wearing tzitzit, because it's considered one of those mitzvot aseishas man gerama, a positive time-bound commandment, because it's only day, not night. There was someone in my shir who said his brother-in-law wears tzitzit at night, you know, to try to be strict. And then Rav Tendler asked him, great, does he also make his wife wear tzitzit? Because if you're going to be strict and wearing tzitzit at night, well, then it's no longer mitzvot aseishas man gerama, in which case your wife should be wearing it too. Yeah.
Which brings up, what about the women who wear tzitzis even though they're not obligated?
Ah, so he actually doesn't mention that here specifically, but that is a phenomenal question. Meaning, would a woman be allowed to go out wearing a tallit? We'll actually get that to. We'll get to that in a couple of halachot. In terms of the comparison with tefillin. So hold on off on that a second. If I don't bring it up, remind me. Are we up to? I skipped to 23 here on page 116. What should a man do when he finds tefillin in the public domain on the Sabbath? He should wear them in the ordinary fashion, placing the head tefillin on his head and the arm tefillin on his arm, as opposed to reversing it and doing it differently. Enter a home and remove them there. Afterwards, he should go out, return, put on a second pair, return home and remove them, and continue this pattern until he brings in all the tefillin. Yeah. If there were many pairs of tefillin, there was not enough time to bring them in by Shabbat wearing them as garments, he should watch them until nightfall and bring them in on Saturday night. In a time of oppressive decrees, when one might fear to linger and watch them until evening, he should cover them where they are located and go back and put them on their way. Arisa, take 24. On page 116.
Should he be afraid to wait until after nightfall because of thieves? He should take the entire group at once and carry them less than 4 cubits at a time. And he should give them to a colleague standing within 4 cubits, who in turn will give them to another colleague until they reach the courtyard at the extremity of the city. When does the above apply? When they are found together with their straps that are tied with the knots with which tefillin are tied, since they are surely tefillin. However, the straps are not tied. One should not pay attention to them.
All right, Dana, number 25.
A person who finds a Torah scroll should linger and watch it until after nightfall. In a time of danger, he may leave it and go on his way. If rain is descending, one should wrap himself in the parchment, cover it with one's outer garment, and enter a home with it.
Yeah. So, it's a little strange there, but there you go. And, Lauren, number 26.
On Friday, shortly before nightfall, a tailor should not go carrying a needle in his hand, nor should a scribe go out carrying his pen unless he forget and transfer it on the Sabbath. A person is obligated to check his clothes on Friday before nightfall lest he forget something in them and inadvertently transfer it on Shabbat. It is permissible to go out wearing tefillin on Friday shortly before sunset. Since a person is obligated to touch his tefillin at all times, there is no possibility that he will forget them. If a person forgets and goes out to the public domain wearing tefillin, When he remembers the tefillin on his head, he should cover his head until he reaches his home or the house of study.
Right, and that's because you make a mistake and you don't want people to assume that you can wear tefillin on Shabbos. All right. Now, so he doesn't actually bring up the case of women here. But the Gemara does actually make that distinction because women normally don't put on tefillin. All right. Considered like a begadi. That, you remember we spoke about that in shul a lot. So we had the question then about women wearing tzitzit. Is that really permissible or impermissible? So that's also, you can say, has been a matter of dispute. Technically speaking, right, the mitzvah is, if you wear a four-cornered garment, you have to put tzitzit on them. Not necessarily that you've got a specially designated arba kanfo. Like today, we've got, you know, tzitzit here. A specially designated garment, four corners, you put tzitzit on them. A talit is a special garment. Back in the day, it was normal to wear four-cornered garments. The example I give for this, you see this in Katamon, particularly. Nachlaot, because you got a bunch of hippie Israelis there, where they wear the equivalent of like the Mexican ponchos, which, like, on their outermost garment, and because they have four corners on it, they put tzitzit on them. Right? That's the way it used to be. Now, about women wearing a garment with tzitzit on it, is it prohibited? No. Rambam would say that a woman could put them on, but not say a bracha over it. Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he dealt with this question, said, well, today, it could be a matter of Beged Ish versus Beged Isha, meaning, since it was anomalous back in the day for women to put on tefillin, for them to carry it, or for them to even wear it, would be problematic, because it would be normal for a man to wear tefillin, whereas it was abnormal for a woman to wear tefillin. Whether or not it's permitted for her to do so, because it's abnormal, it would be like her wearing a signet ring. It's not something that women normally do. So that would be an exception. When Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt with the issue about women wearing tefillin, he made a distinction with Beged Ish versus Beged Isha, that today, by cultural standards, the only people who wear a talit usually are going to be men. Right? However, and this was something which I got into a nice argument with Rav Tendler about, when he was in Israel and a woman went in to buy a talit with pink stripes. So given, I'm not going to get into gender theory here, but given pink is usually associated as a feminine color, right? And a woman is buying a talit with pink stripes, you might argue, oh, this is a particularly feminine garment and therefore would distinguish from the more masculine blue, black, or whatever talitot. I don't know. Those would be different approaches that you could have to it, which, again, you can explain by ways of cultural relativity. Tefillin are discussed specifically in the Gemara. A talit is not, right? Or tzitzit is not, because, again, the obligations themselves are different, the exemptions are different, and the roles are going to be different, right? How you apply that to today, I'll leave that as, again, one of the many open questions here, as well as everything else. So here you can have at least more plausible arguments about what's culturally relative versus what was specifically prohibited by Chazal. Because in theory, like the way that Rambam phrases it, if something new comes up where by social convention men or women would be accustomed to share, you know, show it to others in public, even though it might not have been mentioned specifically in the Gemara, you could make an argument, this is prohibited for such and such a reason. Because even though what the Adam itself wasn't specifically mentioned, probably because it didn't exist, the action was prohibited. And then we can have, you know, I think very plausible disagreements and, you know, judgment about how do you view law, the application of law, and the possibilities for the evolution of law. My own opinion, based on my own tradition, would be the things that are specifically mentioned that are prohibited are still prohibited. So in the event I get married and I live in a place without an eruv, I would not wear a wedding ring on Shabbat, right? My approach. I'm fully aware that there are others who would say, well, since today it changed because the language of the Mishnah seems to say such and such a thing is very specific, even though it does give the reason why it's problematic. And the same thing would apply for like a woman wearing a signet ring, even though that doesn't happen so often today, or women wearing wigs. Again, if you live in a place where there's a kosher Eruv, you're not going to have a problem with this. But then we can get into the whole big fights about what constitutes a kosher Eruv, and I gave three separate classes on that. Assuming there's a place with a kosher Eruv, you've got a lot more to work with. You're in a place like the Lower East Side where there is no Eruv, kosher or otherwise, or at least not today, by pretty much every opinion. Well, the reason why I mention it is the whole, like, lack of, quote, the Manhattan Eruv thing, right? Because the old Manhattan Eruv doesn't exist, right? So even if you thought, like, back in the 60s or 50s, yes, there's a Manhattan Eruv in the Lower East Side is included, not today. I spoke about that, too. Like, things changed around 2005, right? But at any rate, with an Eruv, most of these are non-issues. Without an Eruv, you got to be careful. All right. So with this, we wrap up the segment on carrying, and we'll go on to a different topic next week. Have a wonderful day.